If you're looking to ensure your place, Sheila's Wheels are super ace. We've got an offer that astounds. Get a gift card for £40 for brilliant home insurance deals. Go direct to Sheila's Wheels.
£40 e-gift card applies for new home essentials policies purchased direct between the 5th of March and the 28th of April 2026. See terms and conditions at sheilaswheels.com.
Most people don't fall in life. They settle, not because they're lazy, not because they lack talent, but because they quietly accept the average. Average income, average confidence, average relationships, average results. And here's the dangerous part. Average becomes comfortable. Today's guest has spent his entire career studying why people make decisions, why they make them, and why so many are capable people that stay stuck far below their potential. Now, he is the founder of the Human Communications Institute, developer of human interaction technology, and the author of powerful book, Average Sucks. Now, Michael Burnoff, he has helped hundreds and thousands of people unlock influence, confidence, and high-level communication. Michael, I am so glad to have you on here, and I just want to get to the gundo.
Let's do it, girl. Let's do it. This is gonna be fun. I love the intro. Thank you. Average sucks.
The average sucks.
It does. You know, so talk Jersey right there. It sucks. It's nobody wants to be average.
Nobody wants to be average. You know, you want to go for the gundo. And for the people who don't go for the gundo, there's so much out there if they only took the first step. So, you know, why are so many people capable, you know, like they settle for the average when they know that they are capable of doing more for themselves?
Well, this is interesting because there's two groups of people I've realized. There's this group of people have absolutely no clue. They're not listening to this podcast. They have no clue. They don't care. They either have no clue or just don't care. They're not here right now. But the people listening that would actually get on a show like this that are listening right now, this is my challenge to them. You are so talented. You are working so hard, even being here to figure this out. Yeah. Why not get the results that you're looking for? So I think you work hard. I think you're super talented. I just think that no one is actually, forget I think. I am certain that people have not figured out how to be as effective as possible with their mind, their words and their actions. Like no one is teaching this. And I have been disgusted by that fact since I first realized this.
Yes. Oh, I agree totally. Now people think average is safe, but you argue that average is actually a trap. Now let's break that down. Like why do people unconsciously create an average, you know, thermostat for their lives?
So this is the way I look at this whole average thing. I've got it everywhere. I got it on my phone. I've got it on my shirt. I wear it all the time. And it's not like I live in Scottsdale, Arizona, which is equivalent to like Short Hills, New Jersey. If we were to get, you know, Short Hills, that's where they live, right? That's one of those areas, right? And I got my license plates. His average sucks. Guy drives by. He's got a Lamborghini. He's like, man, love your plates, brother. I'm like, do you know what it means? And he goes, yeah, man, be better than everyone else. I said, no, it's your average. And the guy stops. We have a conversation and I go, we all have an average, and our averages are unconscious minds attempt to give us exactly what we want easily. And most of us have an average income, an average sex life, an average level of times we go on vacation a year, an average seat we sit in a plane, the same restaurant we go to. And if it's not the average you want, my question is, are you willing to upgrade it? So this is not about I'm better than you. It's what do you want for your programming of your life? And very few people know we can actually change this. And that has a lot to do with how we were raised, taught in the school systems, because we'd learn math, we learn economics, we learn French and Spanish, but nobody's teaching anybody how to be happy or how to deal with a bad day or deal with a breakup or how to learn how to get goals. I didn't take goal setting in school, did you?
Oh.
How many classes did you take on goal setting in first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, sixth grade, all through high school?
I didn't get that in any of that. I didn't even get that in college. You know,
$250,000. You didn't get it in college.
Yep. $250,000. I didn't get it in college. And you know what, if you parents don't realize this, a lot of them, but by the time you send your first kid through elementary school, you've already spent $100,000. And, you know, and I guarantee you, they didn't get a quarter of what they need to in order to survive in life.
I always say the first day of kindergarten, they should have stepped up. It should be like 5 years old, six, you walk in and they go, Stacy, What kind of life would you like to live? Even if you said, I want to be a mailman, they should have said, great. Here's how mailmen think, or male women think. Here's how male women talk. Here's how the mailman delivers mail. Here's how to be the greatest mailman in the world. Instead, they're like, you need to learn this because we've got to program you to be like everyone else instead of who God put you on this earth to be, Stacey, an incredible human being to make a difference.
Oh, 100%. Now, where does that internal limit come from?
Two things. One is it's there for a reason. It's a lot to do with our language. So there's two things that are simple. There's your mind, which is way more powerful than AI. And everyone's like, go to learn AI. I feel bad that everybody wants to learn AI and nobody wants to learn how their freaking mind works. And the mind works off something called words, which is all AI is words simulated a certain way. So here's where it happens, Stacey. Have you ever had a friend say to you, relationships are hard?
I can't even tell you how many people said that to me.
Think about it. So they say things like business is hard, correct?
Yeah.
So what happens is when you say relationships are hard and business is hard, your mind goes, sounds great. Let me hook Stacey up. I want to make it hard for her. I'm going to remind her and get her to be that way. Versus it's harder than I'd like it to be. And what can I do? So most people had no idea that at some point in their life, they used their own words to make their patterning and programming slow them down from getting what I want. So if this isn't, and then the other side of it is you get on these dumb things, these phones, and you look online and you're like, well, how do I be like everyone else? Not how do I be the full version of myself? And that is the saddest thing in the world. Everyone's researching like, oh my God, my kid's bulimic, or, oh wow, like I feel like I'm failing. How do I research failing? The last time I checked, I want to research someone that beat bulimia, not someone to figure out how to get it. You know, I don't want to figure out why I have ADD. I want to find the 20 people that got rid of it and how to deal with it. So I bring this up for a very simple term. Most people don't realize your average was put there by you, and you have the ability to create the average you want, and you'll always have one. But the question is it the one you want?
Exactly. And why do people often sabotage themselves the moment they start to succeed?
Okay. So funny word, sabotage. I think that's from 1969 or 70 from a group called EST or Landmark. I think Werner Erhard invented like two words, authentic and sabotage. And it's a wonderful word that therapists use because like I'm sabotaging myself. I don't think we sabotage ourselves as much as we use patterns and programs that don't serve us because they're uncomfortable. Because remember, when you said to yourself, I remember you said this, Stacey, if one day I could get on TV or one day I could make six figures, it'll be great. And then we finally make six figures. We finally get on TV. We finally make seven figures. And then we start talking about wanting to do more. And our mind is like, wait a second. We wanted to get here. We said this was the ultimate. We said our wedding was the best day of our lives. Mm-hmm. Huh. And if the wedding is the best day of your life, how is any other day ever going to be good? And we destroy our marriage by saying the wedding was the best day of my life. Because what the hell are you going to do with the rest of your life? I mean, you're not going to have an open bar every day. You're not going to get a horse-drawn carriage every day. What pressure to put on yourself. So what happens is we need to say, up until now, this has been one of the greatest days of my life. I'm excited to see what happens next. So our language limits us. And that's why I'm a big builder of language, no different than Meta, Instagram, Facebook, Fox, NBC, CNN. They study at the tune of a gazillion dollars a year language, and we should study it too.
Right. Oh, I agree 100%. Now, this is fascinating. Like some of the smartest people we know are still stuck. They read books, they watch podcasts, they attend seminars, but nothing changes. You know, why is that?
It would depend on who. Like I'd have to like meet them and know who exactly. But if I were to generalize, I would say learning is cute. And I think we get off on it like a 1-900 number back on the day. Like it gets exciting versus implementation, which is actually doing something with it. So I think we have a society of people that are obsessed with acquiring knowledge and very few people with the courage to actually do something with it. So smart and effective don't live in the same box. You could be effective and smart, but if you're only smart and not effective, you're not very useful. And I meet a lot of people. You ever been to a diner?
Mm-hmm.
I know we talk about the Greek thing, but the diner, right? So you go to a diner in the middle of the night, like on a Monday in Jersey or New York, and there's always that waiter or waitress, and they know everything about everything. They know about politics, the economy, how to sell your home better than you could ever sell it, who should win this. They could tell you what stocks to buy. They don't know anything about it. They're a Monday night guy or girl at a diner. And I think a lot of people are full of knowledge, and very few people are full of effective experience.
Do you think sometimes it could be like the fear of judgment because so many people are worried what the next person next to them is doing, or they're afraid that they're going to be rejected, and they're afraid, what will a person say, the fear of failure maybe.
I think it's less that we fear failure. It's more we put a timeline on success, meaning that things had to happen quicker. But the judgment thing, man, I remember my friend Evan's grandma growing up. I think she was like a 70s. And she goes, "You kids were 12, we're 12. Like, you're going to finally get to the point that you could flatulate in public and you don't care." And this is like a 70-year-old woman says this, right? Could you picture like a grandma, this like Russian grandma saying this? And I remember hearing that, and I've made that like a desire to get to a point where I don't care. Like, and I train my kids, and it's hard, especially being young teenage girls. And my daughter now is almost 25 next week. And what's interesting is when we get to the point that we care so much that we don't care at all, you can actually be free and have a great life. It's this desire to make others happy that'll actually make you miserable. It's funny, Stacey. Years ago, I had a guy. I'm out one night, and I'm 6'7", right? I'm a big person, and this guy taps me, and he goes, "How tall are you?" And he was little. He was like 4'5". Like, this guy was really little, and I go, "I'm 6'7", and I go, "How tall are you?" And he goes, "Oh, I'm like 4'5". And he goes, "When are you going to start acting 6'7"? He said that to me. I said, I was ready to pop him, and I go, "What do you mean?" He goes, and he didn't really mean height. He meant you're living like 6'1". And if you're 4'5" and you're living all 4'5", that's great. Like, I know people that live full version of themselves. So I think we get so consumed copping out and wanting to live through others that we don't spend our lives learning how to live what we're capable of doing. So my purpose in life is, I got a tombstone picked out and it says, "Stacy, all used up, nothing left. Did it all while I was here." And my outcome is to, how do I be all of Michael Burnoff, not how do I act like John or Bill or Susie? And I'm working on it. It's not perfect, but I think that's where most of us go wrong. We spend our lives trying to be like others.
I agree. I remember talking to somebody, and they're like, "You know what? You look at somebody, and you're like, idolize that person. Wow, I wish I could be that person. Oh, wow, you know." And it's like, well, and then people compare themselves, and they get frustrated because they're not at that level. But you know what? You don't know what that person's done to get to that level, and you might just be starting out. So you're on level one. They're on level 40, but they've been doing this for the last 25 years. You
Bingo.
know, so you're not, you can't compare yourself to others. You got to focus on you. And like you said earlier, when you are happy with yourself and you're being you and you are just focusing on what you need, what you want, what's going to make you happy, there is a sense of freedom. You're not serving others anymore. You're focusing on yourself, and then you're giving back to the world. And that's what it really should be about, is that you focus on being the best version of you. And then once you get to that point and you are happy with who you are, then it's time to give back to the world and help others who are trying to get to that same point or that same thought of action.
I really love that. We just got done with the Olympics. I don't know when this all goes live and everybody's watching it, and I see it every time. And you ever seen someone do something great? Like, who have you seen do something great? Whether it's an athlete or like, just let's play. Like, I'm going to show you where 99% of the humans screw up their confidence and screw up their abilities in one word. And I'm just going to show you this. Who have you ever seen do something great? Like, just pick anything. I don't care. Like, you name a human where, I don't want to call it an idol because we shouldn't have false idols. The Bible says so, right? But like, who have you seen do something great? Let's just pick it. Business, personal, relationship, you name someone.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about a football player because you mentioned the Olympics, and then I thought about like when we had the playoffs, and I am not like that much into football. My husband is, but there were some guys that
See,
just
a Giants
didn't.
fan?
Yes, a
Okay,
Giants
because if not, the podcast is over because I'm a Giants fan. Go ahead.
And there were some guys that did amazing moves, amazing catching and the speed. And I was like, wow, I couldn't believe it. And you know, there's so many people that do great things, whether it's in the medical field, whether it's in the business, what era, whether it's just helping a little old lady cross the street because she can't make it across the street and you're holding up your bag. There, you know, that term could be used in so many ways.
Let's take that word, and I'm just going to share with everybody. If you're still listening right now, this is something that I'm going to tell you. I challenge you to do this and teach it to your kids. So let's just say you see an athlete do something incredible. My family's figure skating. So let's say you see someone do like a triple axel. You'd be like, oh my God, how do they do that? That's what everybody says, correct? And in that moment, you have just made it harder for yourself to get what you want. So I'm going to tell everyone a very simple thing. The way the mind works is based on picture, sounds, and feelings. I've been studying neuroscience now for 25 years. So when I say, how does Stacy do that? So I see Psychology Today up there and I go, how does she do that? How does she get in that magazine? How does she write 20 books? How does she cure herself, a cure, or learn to deal with effectively epilepsy? How does she do that? And immediately I put her on a pedestal. And when you put yourself on a pedestal, it's kind of like, remember that show, The Jetsons back in the day? It's like, George is down here and little Spacely is like little, but he's on a pedestal and he's looking up at him. So when you look up and admire somebody, you put yourself on the ground. So Stacey, how smart would it be instead of watching this person do something incredible, saying, how do they do that? Wouldn't it make more sense to say, how could I do that?
Yes.
Think of the change in words. Your brain then goes, Michael, Stacey, you can do that if you wanted to. That is a dedicated thing. We have not been doing that up till now. But if you'd like to switch to that, we could. So instead of looking at like, God, how does John deal with his ADD? How can I deal with my ADD to be more like John? And what's interesting is the second we put ourselves in there, your unconscious mind goes, got it. This seems important to him or her. We want to do this. That phrase should be taught in kindergarten. So when Michael Jordan scores 100 points, that player should say, got it. That is incredible. How can I do that? And then put yourself on the plan to do it. That phrase has transformed thousands of my clients' lives because they've gotten themselves healthier, more effective, because they made it about something they can and will do.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And that is such a great analogy to keep in your brain and to focus on. Now, you've created something called human interaction technology, and that's a fascinating concept. Like, break down for us, like, what it is actually.
Well, here's the deal. So I studied neuroscience for the last, let's just say, 25 years. And what HIT is, it's the study of how the way that we communicate with each other. It's three things. Human, I'm from Jersey, so we don't say human, we say human. We just cut off the H. I don't know what it is, but human is about how human beings use language to affect the nervous system of others. It's how we think about how we think and how our words impact how we think. So whether it's creating rapport or influence or altering picture, sounds, and feelings inside of the mind. So HIT, it first started off something to be used for like therapy and to help people do transformational coaching work. Then I realized when you're selling, we're coaching people into believing it's okay to make a decision, which it is. And with parents, we're coaching them to believe they can empower other people. So it is the study and the understanding of literally what the highest effective performers do in the world to get what they want. Because I'm not very good at golf. I've never dedicated myself to be good at it, but I have four professional golf players that actually play right now that I currently coach and work with, and I'm getting their golf game, getting their strokes down, and I'm working with, I don't know anything about golf, but I know about the mind and how the words they use affect the things that they do. Because most people in sales, how long you been in business, Stacey?
Over 25 years.
25 years. You've probably said, what do I say to them? Wrong question. What do I say to myself prior to even walking in there? Because your mindset of how you feel is going to permeate deeper than any words you use. So HIT, I've certified thousands of people in it over the years, is for the highest performing people that are looking to become more effective at getting the things that they want. It is not positive thinking. It is not motivation. It is effective use of your own mind and how to use words to impact it and how to use words to impact another's mind to assist them in getting what they want.
I love that. That's such a powerful way of thinking and very effective, very effective. Now, how does it help people understand the psychological triggers, human influence, you know, communication patterns, like what people say, you know, yes or no?
Yeah, it's interesting. So right now at this moment, Silicon Valley and major corporations are spending billions of dollars to figure out like how to get our attention, lower resistance, get us stuff to see things. Like they know that the word love produces oxytocin in the body, which is the second most powerful chemical and the second most powerful word outside of God. It goes love. It goes in that order and maybe the same thing. I don't know how biblical people are, but that's those words kind of go hand in hand that you need them. They know that. Right. And they know that if you can love Dunkin' Donuts, you won't stop eating them. Right. So we create patterns in ourselves based on the language we use. And there's four main chemicals. There is dopamine for excitement. There's cortisol for fear. Like when you were dealing with the challenges you had earlier in life that were in your past, notice how I said that, not in your present, in your past, cortisol, the fear, was probably not allowing you to think as clearly as you needed to, correct?
Right.
Concerns, could this happen today? Would this happen now? Would this work out for me? Could I do this? Versus using what's called serotonin, which is a different neurotransmitter, which is the feeling of, you know what, up until now, I've handled this very well for several months, and I'll continue to find ways to do that. I'm very proud of how I've done this. Because Stacey, do you have kids?
Three.
Okay. So this is controversial, what I'm going to share, but how old are your kids?
They're all grown up, 27, 20, 25, and 22.
Okay. You're 25, boys or girls? What do you got?
I got two girls and a boy.
Which is easier?
Boy.
At least they smell, but I have all girls. I even have a girl dog. It's the emotions, but they're amazing. But the connection between fathers and their daughters is amazing. I got to tell you, that's special. It's really amazing. I have all girls. I just know I hear the boys smell, but they're easier to deal with. I make the joke about the smell. But when our kids, our outcome as parents is to empower our kids. And we're taught like, oh, we want to tell them good job all the time and all that stuff. And we don't realize that a lot of us are conditioning our kids to need us and not realizing it. There's a difference between building a relationship and building a dependency. So one of the things we learned a long time ago is with our kids, like, did your kids ever do anything well, academics or sports? Like even for a moment, like did they ever perform well at anything?
Sports. They did well in sports.
Name me a sport. Name me a sport. I don't want to throw you under the bus, but just name me a sport.
My son did good in wrestling and football, and my daughters, that, you know, they had they were good in creativity.
Okay. So, and I got my daughters too. They're very creative. They're arts and carts and creative and dance and do all that stuff. So what's interesting about it is what we don't do enough is, let's say your kid does a great takedown in wrestling. You'd say, oh, great job, Bill. Great job, Bobby. Great job, Johnny. You did it. Awesome. High five. And they go, thanks, mom. Appreciate it. What I've learned how to do is that is the secretion of what's called serotonin, which is they feel like they did a good job, that what they did. Yeah. What I've learned how to say to kids is, when they do something great, say, that is a great takedown you did. You should be proud of yourself. Mm-hmm. So the second you say it, they get that Tom Brady shit-eating grin. You remember that boy in high school? We're not going to say his name, but remember that quarterback that all the girls liked? He had that grin. Remember that grin? That grin means he liked himself. And people are attracted to people that like themselves. So what I've trained people how to do is tell their kids and their salespeople, great job. You should be proud of yourself. And then you watch the leak, you watch the serotonin go like this, and they go, I did that. So now my kids walk up to me and they tell me they're proud of themselves. They don't need me to be proud of them. They know I'm proud of them. I love them. I'm proud of them. Yeah. They're proud of themselves. So how this works is, I believe our purpose on earth as leaders is to empower humans to believe in themselves.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And how can someone use these tools to like increase their charisma and their influence in everyday life too?
I mean, the most charismatic people are people that are very likable. You don't need to be liked. Most people want to get likes online. You want to be likable. And likable is like you've got something about you. So your charisma is actually a strategy. People don't realize it's not something you're born with. Some people just do something effective. I don't think anybody's born with anything. I think people do things. Right. I do think we have predispositions. I do believe if you have a family that's done it before, odds are you may do it yourself. But how I look at charisma is actually a form of a language pattern. It is the ability to use feelings, sounds and visualizations at the same order. So if you follow really, really good speakers, they're going to say, now, one thing I really, really want you to experience while you're here is what I'm about to say next. Because when you see this, it'll change everything for you. So what happens is charisma is not how I move my hands. It is the fact that I stimulated your feelings, then your sounds, then your pictures in that physical order. So it's learning how to use your words sometimes in a different order. Like, I'll give you an example. You ever been in a sales meeting?
Yes.
This is nuts, right? So you're sitting there in sales and go, listen, I could do a whole presentation, or we could have a conversation about how to help your company. What do you think everybody's going to pick?
How to help the company.
Do you think they're going to want a conversation or a presentation?
Oh, a conversation for sure.
So the second you offer somebody that, you know what, we could either do the typical presentation and I'll go over the features and benefits of my product and you'll send me to your HR department. We hope it works and send it to billing. Or we could have a conversation about whether this makes sense to you or not. Which would you pick? And what are they going to say? A conversation. So the second you do that, you have now changed the frame in their mind of someone that's having a conversation. Then you'd say, listen, my whole goal is not to sell you. It's to guide you to something that might work. The second you say the word guide, people trust guides. They don't trust salespeople. So the second you say, I want to guide you, this is selectively using language to shift the part of people's minds.
Yes.
So like, everyone's defenses are up because they want to know why they're here. So all you got to say is, I bet you're wondering why we scheduled the meeting. What's funny is you don't need to tell them why. You just get them to go, I'm going to learn why. But what's most important, they say, what? What's most important is using our time wisely so I can show you how your company can save money. Because what if today gives you the answers? And the second you bounce between why and what and how and what if in that order, somebody's defenses come down, because those are the four things to unlock the door. If you give somebody why, what, how, and what if, instantly they become receptive to you. That's a quick version. I could cover more, but that's a very important thing that people could learn.
Oh, yeah. You know, words are so powerful, and how we use words plays a big impact on how it triggers individuals, and how you can, just by using the right words and just understanding the person who's sitting in front of you, what type of person they are, and then using the right words can shift a relationship or a conversation completely. You know, someone can walk in there with a defense mode, a wall up. But if you have the right conversations, you use the right words, you can really gain trust with that individual right away. And you could have a meaningful conversation and a meaningful outcome as well.
And it's always simple. Like, you know, it's so funny. Have you, remember when your kids were little and they fell, got hurt? What does every good meaning, nice Greek, Italian, Jewish mom from New Jersey runs up really loud? What do they say? Are you
okay?
Now listen, okay. You got a kid that's bleeding, missing two of their teeth on the ground, right? And you're asking if they're okay. That is the dumbest thing to say. So you ever want to break rapport with somebody that is bleeding? Ask if they're okay. Here's what you do instead. You go, wow, I bet that hurts really bad. And they're going to say, yeah, you know what I do when I hurt real bad? I get up and let's go get a napkin, or let's get some ice and figure this out. When you ask someone, are you okay? You actually put them in more pain. So what most therapists do is they ask, so tell me what happened. Boom, we got to relive all the problem again, versus are you open to the idea with finding new ways to be happy?
Yes.
There's never been a therapist in the world that session one. They'd be out of business. So you do what I do. You charge a fortune for one session. You solve it in one, and they don't ever have to come back. But think about that. Has anyone ever said on the marriage counseling, are you guys against the idea that we could solve this in an hour? Wouldn't that be a great first line?
That would be amazing. But I don't think there is one therapist on the planet that would do that.
Because they've been trained by the sick man fraud model. And I mean, Sigmund Freud, forgive me. And they've been trained on an old model. And that's what most people do, is they think we got to dig it up. We got to go over the problems. We got to go through it, versus let's create a new solution, because solution-based communication is more powerful than problem-based.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Now, you've trained executives, entrepreneurs, and professionals around the world. Like, what are the biggest mistakes that people make when communicating? Like, is it talking too much? Is it trying to sound smart instead of clear? Maybe not understanding the psychology of the person that they're speaking to?
Interesting. So when I get a question like that, my immediate answer would be, okay, it depends on the person, depends on the medium. Like if you're face to face, there's things you can do that are different than on a podcast. I was talking to Dan Martell about this at one point. I don't know if you know Dan, but he's big all over the internet. And he was saying, like, if you quickly have the answer online, you don't seem as confident. You seem too confident and too polished. You make people uncomfortable. But if you take a minute to think about it, they can connect with you better. It's fascinating how speed changes things. So I think most people, actually, I'm certain most people, they don't check their own language first. So this is my theory I'll give you on most people. And it's really about the question of how do you want people to respond to you? So if you want people to buy from you, you want people to believe in you, you want people to listen, you want people to watch you. The way that you talk to yourself about yourself is how you're going to respond to you. So if I say, this is hard, this is difficult, I'm not good at this, or this is easy, this is fun, I enjoy this, I love it, here's what's going to happen. Depending on your track, I'm going to respond differently to me. Now, catch this. The way that I think about myself or see myself is how I'm going to respond. But here's the crazy part. The way that I talk about me to me prior to even this interview, Stacey, is how you're going to respond to me. So if we want people to respond differently, we need to talk differently about ourselves to other people, because the way that we talk about ourselves to ourselves immediately is going to impact other people. So we've got to realize, like, what is our internal talk track that's going on? So before we ever start, how do we communicate with others? Is how do we see ourselves and how do we talk about it? And I don't mean inflated affirmations and a bunch of BS that they're teaching in the going to Sedona and rub a rock on your head. I'm talking about literally saying things like this. Like, Stacey, I had a lady that I worked with that very wealthy, successful person just going through a divorce. And she goes, man, my divorce is hard. And I said to her, I said, actually, it's not. She goes, well, what do you mean? And she got mad because she wanted it to be hard. I said, no, it's harder than you'd like it to be. And the funny thing is, you're not even going through divorce anymore, because the divorce is the paperwork you already signed. You're learning how to have a new relationship with that person that you used to be with. She goes, I never saw it that way. So if you're going through a divorce, you'll attract other people that see it that way. The second you allow yourself to get to the point of, I'm learning how to communicate differently and have a different form of a relationship with someone I used to be with, not only is it healing, it's going to be better. So I find most executives, they work to be powerful versus being effective. And power used too powerfully is not as effective as we think it is, because what it does is it destroys the confidence of other people. One thing Elon Musk does very well, at least studying him, I haven't met him yet, but one thing he does very well is he doesn't empower people to figure it out, or he just moves on to the next person. But what he does is he believes enough. Phil Knight did this too in the book Shoe Dog I read. Did you read Shoe Dog? It was a great book.
No, I did.
He would hire people that he believed could accomplish things, and he believed in them, and he let them give it a shot. And if they couldn't, then he moved on to the next person. But what's interesting is, if I come across that I know everything about everything, I make you insecure. Out of my own insecurity, I try to dominate you, versus really effective people go, Stacey, you're going to know more about this than I am. I'm just going to work to catch up. Our friend Mark Victor Hansen, we both know, Mark is an expert at that. He just gives the power to the other person. He goes, Stacey, you know more about this than me. You're smarter than me. Even if he's the smartest guy in the room, he's going to make you the smartest woman in the room. And most people are so busy with being need out of their own insecurity to dominate another person, no different than a 9-year-old or 12-year-old little girl. They want to control and dominate another person through their own knowledge base and power, versus how do I empower as many people around me to feel great so they can do the work for me?
And that is so true. I see that all the time. And when you do give the power to the other person and you do share with them how unique and how powerful they are in so many ways, the situation changes, and you know, they let their walls down and they actually share and react differently. And that power that they have within them, you know, finally starts to break through. And that stuck we were talking about, they're no longer stuck when you give them the opportunity to say, I believe in you, you can do it. Let me hear your ideas, because I think you're a great individual with lots of qualities. And then all of a sudden they're like, wow. You know, he believes in me, or she believes in me. And all of a sudden, you know, you see miracles happen.
Yes, yes, yes. And those miracles, which most people miss, are, and the reason I'll steal something from one of my favorite movies, Grand Canyon. Most yeah. people don't recognize miracles because they don't know what to look for.
Yeah.
And miracles are like this conduit. Sometimes it's a person coming into our lives for a reason, a season, or a minute. And they introduce you to the next person. And that's the miracle. It doesn't have to be a burning bush and God talking to you. That doesn't have to be so complicated what a miracle is. A miracle could be a challenge you go through and a book that you find on the bookshelf that wakes you up.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Now let's make this real for our listeners.
Yeah.
Michael, if someone was listening and realizes that they've been settling for the average, what are the three moves that they can make this week to raise the standards?
So what do you mean by raising standards?
So if they think a certain way and they're like in that safe mode that we were talking about in our conversation, what are three things that could actually get them to leave that safe mode, take a chance, and become the person they really want to become deep down in their heart?
So let's make a scenario. Let's make a real person. Let's make this like there's a guy named John and he's this. Let's make it, because let me just teach you, people don't learn very well from generalizations. They learn really well from specifics. So let's make up an imaginary person, or maybe you can pick somebody you know, or maybe yourself.
Right.
Give me an example of a person that wants to achieve something. You make it up. Oh, it could be anything.
Okay, so I know this shy, introverted individual that has all the knowledge-based information in her brain. She has what it takes, but she doesn't believe in herself.
What does she want to do?
She wants to live a better life. She wants to accomplish more. But in her retrospect, she's always thinking about the worst scenario that could happen for every situation. She doesn't think about the possibilities of success or the possibilities of achieving, you know, what she wants to achieve. She's thinking of the what ifs and the worst scenarios that could happen from taking a chance and moving out of that safe box.
So three answers I'm going to give. Number one is most people say I am introverted. And the first thing I'm going to change is that I am and switch it to this. Up until now, I have shown up introverted. And the reason you say up until now, it gives a clean break to the unconscious mind. Instantaneously, it clear cut goes up till now, which means there's a possibility we presuppose something could get better, correct? That's number one. So we're going to take the I am and we're just going to say up until now.
Yeah.
Number two, you're going to say something to the effect of this. This thing that I want to do, obviously I can do this if I applied myself to it. I just haven't applied myself yet. So when I see people walk past a piano, let's just say you're in New York City. One of my favorite restaurants out here is Mastro's. They got one in the city. It's wonderful. Great steakhouse. They got a piano downstairs, probably $100,000, $200,000 piano, gorgeous piano. If you and I walk by it and we've never played the piano, we're going to be like, I can't do that, versus of course I could do that if I applied myself. So we've got to give ourselves a frame that it's possible. I'm not saying you've got to say, I'm going to be the best pianist and I'm going to be Beethoven. That's bullshit. Yeah. That's stupid. What you say is, of course I could get better at this if I applied myself to it. The third scenario is there's something you said about what if. We need to take the what if that's being used and hijacked as a terrorist right now. Because her what if is, what if it doesn't go wrong? What if this? What if one phone call and working with a coach was all I needed to allow me to get better? What if the reason I've been an introvert was to get me to realize it's frustrating and I need to use that frustration to change? We need to take the what if and shift it. So her what if, which is the most powerful words, what if? Jim Rohn was my mentor. That was one of my mentors when I was a young boy. I don't know if you ever heard of Jim Rohn, but Jim was like OG original, taught Tony Robbins, everybody. Jim was my mentor. I'm like a little boy up there. And Jim would say, what if you could do it? So I really want to challenge everybody listening, like, What if the reason you got on this podcast today was for you to recognize that you've got a mind and it works off words, and if you just got a little better with words, things would shift? What if?
100%.
So that's what I would do. I would shift a few things. So instead of like this long, hard plan, we've got to shift it. Well, Michael, it didn't change. Of course, nothing changed when we do that immediately.
Right.
But your thinking starts to change. Because remember, you don't just want to change what you think. You want to change how you think. So when people say, Michael, what is the fastest way to change your life? You can write this down. Change your words.
Yeah. 100%. As simple as that. 100%. Now, your book, Average Sucks, has resonated with thousands of people.
65,000 to be exact. Copies of this are out there in the world. Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. What inspired you to actually write it?
I did not want to write. It's funny. You said earlier, I think you said your husband got you to get the book done. My wife had to finish this job on me. So like, there's like, I had a company. I own an institute out here. I had spoke all over the world, made tens and 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 tens of millions of dollars in sales. I've done very well. I want to get this book done. But then a 7-year-old boy was trying to write the book. I just got to tell you, like a 7-year-old little boy trying to write the book with ADD. I'm 39 years old at the time. I can't get this freaking book done. And then I really wanted to get it done because I was sick of this idea that kids that grew up in the middle class or people that grew up in the middle class like I did, which back in the day was the majority of the population. They were being left as okay. Like, why would these people are good? Their parents are making between 60,000 and 150. They're right in the middle. They're okay. They're safe. They go on a week of vacation a year. They go to the Catskills. They go to Orlando. They do their thing. They go to college and they're stuck because they're okay. And then that died around 2005. The whole middle class died. It just disappeared. It went away and nobody told anybody. So I wanted to warn everybody that like, hey, listen, that bullshit that you've been sold as a kid, that it's okay to be average. You're screwed when you get older if you don't fix that. So I got obsessed with teaching it. So I wrote a book for people that are way too talented and working way too hard to be getting the results that they're currently getting, that are looking for simple and easy tools to help them and their families get the things they want out of life, that truly believe it's possible still to not walk past those first class seats on a plane and actually say, you know what? I'm going to put together a plan to never sit in the back of the plane again. You know what I am going to do is put together a plan to stay in the suites at the hotel. I am going to put together a plan where I don't have to retire broke. I am going to not settle for an average relationship and be like other people. So I wrote it out of frustration, but what got me to get the book done was I finally realized the wrong person was writing it. A 7-year-old boy was writing the book instead of a 39-year-old guy that had traveled all over the world, had a beautiful wife, beautiful family, and every reason to do well. So I said, what would that guy do? And that guy asked for help. And I reached out to my wife, who's really good at the process person. I'm the visionary. And she goes, I can help you. And I was 97% done. And 5 days later, the publisher had the book. But 5 years later, over 50,000 copies of this are in the hand of people and making a difference in people's lives.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And what's the biggest transformation people will experience after applying the ideas in the book?
They're going to realize that they're closer than they realize to getting what they want and the frustration they have. Cause this is the crazy part. Like I never knew. You ever been in like a high dive? Like you ever like, I used to go to Action Park when I was a kid. Do you remember Action Park?
Oh, I remember Action Park.
I still got bruises. I interviewed the owner of the park on my, and I figured Jersey, you knew it. I interviewed the owner on my podcast and it was crazy. So I used to go climb to the top of this cliff to jump off, but I'd stand there for 20 minutes, like a mime scared to jump.
Yeah. Well,
most of us in business and in life, we're scared to make the move. So if you've ever said like, what the hell's in my way or what the heck's in my way? And like, what is this feeling? Why am I stuck at, I'm making $380,000 a year. Last year I made 360. This year I made 410. What the hell? Why am I not going to 550, 700, a million? Why is my body always about somewhere an average of 7 pounds overweight? Sometimes I'm looking good. Sometimes I'm 12 pounds overweight. Why am I that way?
Yeah.
Well, the book's going to get you comfortable with how your unconscious mind works. And it's going to get you to realize that there's a few very simple things that you could do to take the power back. And a lot of us want to learn how to control others, but the book's going to be the beginning of a human owner's manual. How do you control you?
I love that. I love that. Also, your seminars and programs have impacted hundreds of thousands of people worldwide. Yeah. What happens inside one of your events that makes it so powerful?
You meet you. I mean, it's crazy. It's the safest place you could ever go. You get around other high functioning human beings. Hundreds and hundreds of people are there. It's intimate. And you meet people, but everyone there is a good person. That's just not where they want to be. And you learn your patterns, what makes you do what you do, what makes others do what they do. But you'll go like this so many times, I have to like warn people like, oh my God, I picked up my mom. I can't believe I do that. So we teach things where the way you use your words, maybe taking power away from your kids or maybe giving too much in certain areas. You'll learn with your team how you can be more effective. You'll learn how your independence is causing you challenges because you don't let people help you. You also learn how to influence other people, influence yourself. And the coolest part about it is you become acutely aware of what makes you Stacy or Julie or Bob or Bill do the things you do and what to actually do about it. So we don't leave you. I'm the only speaker the whole time. It is the most exciting experience anyone can go through. It's called Core Live. And I do it a couple times a year. And it's people walk out of there going, and they bring their kids over 14. They let kids come. And it's amazing because parents and kids can actually sit at a dinner table and talk about, remember that course they didn't teach at school on what do you want with your life and how do you actually get there? Well, nobody taught me in kindergarten, so I made the course now for anybody they want to come.
Love it. I love it. I love it. Now tell everybody, you know, where they can find you, the services you provide, and, you know, how they can start really diving into your head by learning, you know, through your courses, through your book, through all the stuff that you offer, how they could start changing their life and getting unstuck and be able to move forward in their life.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways. It really just depends like how fast you like to move and what you like to do. There's probably a couple different types of people on here. If you've never done an event or seminar before, you definitely should get there one of these days. I'm just going to tell you, allowing yourself to transform with other people is so exciting. There's this thing called Google and there's this thing called Instagram and Facebook. I'd say go to Instagram and find my account, subscribe. There's a really cool thing I have in there called the 1% Advantage. I made like an hour coaching session, which will walk you through some cool stuff. You just can watch it. And at the end, it'll say, hey, do you want to work with me? You can or not. It's up to you. There's a thing called Amazon, or you can go to averagesucks.com. You can get this book. I say, if you can turn 20, 25 bucks into 50 or 100 or 1,000 or 1,000,000, go for it. Great read. And the one other thing I was going to say out there, Stacy, is there's some serious people out there. And if you're like old school, like a Gen Xer like me, this is a phone. I'm going to give you a number. You can text 480-800-8051. I'll give it to you one more time. 480-800-8051. Send a text. Send me the word influence. You can mention Stacy and it's a real person. My assistant will be on there. And if you have a reason for us to talk or you want to take a class or you want to get certified and stuff, just reach out. Like those doers, every time I do a call, like there's always somebody that goes, Michael, I've heard this stuff before. I like it. I'm ready. Just have courage, reach out. And that's what Stacy and I would do. Just text me the word influence. So, or michaelburnoff.com. These are just options, but I bet you could find me.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Now, for all you listeners, I just want you to remember that average is comfortable, but comfort rarely leads to growth. The truth is, most people aren't stuck because they lack ability. They're stuck because they've accepted a standard that's too low for themselves. If today's conversation made you rethink and possibly for the rest of your life, we're going to include Michael Burnoff's book, programs, and information in the show notes. And if you want more than just conversations that challenge your thinking and help you level up your life, then follow this podcast because we're not here to stay average. We're here to raise the standard. I could talk to you for hours. I wish we had more time today.
Me too.
You know, I love having you on the show. I love you. I love what you're doing.
Thank you.
Think a lot like me, and that makes me love you even more. And I just thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day to come on the show and to share your knowledge with something that so many people struggle with. And I love that you have, you know, taken your knowledge, your experience through life, and, you know, used it to help so many others out there. And you're doing a wonderful job, and you are a wonderful individual. And I am honored to have you on the show. And I'm just honored to call you my friend.
I love it, Stacey. And I'm going to have you, my team is going to be reaching out to get you on our show as well. Because if anyone hasn't listened to this incredible woman's story, I'm just going to tell you, we talked prior to the show beginning. If we would have recorded that, that would have been the most epic thing, but we didn't. It is an honor to be here, and somebody that's created what you've created, been through what you've been through, and building the life you're building through adversity and challenges. I admire you, inspire me in just such incredible ways, Stacey. And I mean that wholeheartedly. I can't wait to get with my team in a minute and go book her for the show. So plan on seeing that email.
I love it. Well, Michael, have a great day, and we'll talk soon. Have a great
day. You too.